Delilah, my boss, calls in from the dog park and tells us it's time. We must shed our stretch, she says, slap ourselves out of our lethargy, embrace the hum of new promise because the world is fun and thrilling again now that people have stopped being so bothered by death. Beatrice, Delilah's Lhasa Apso, has begun to hump a makeshift statue of Frank Sinatra in the background of her video. Beatrice, we all scold in our blazers and leggings. Privately, we panic. Sweat trickles down our strained waistbands and the timid hairs of our neglected legs and other limp lower half things to the sourdough crumbs in our slippers as we grapple with this change of heart. We thought Delilah didn't mind. We thought Delilah enjoyed calling in from the dog park. We thought Delilah was flexible. Delilah yanks Beatrice's leash as Beatrice continues to hump Frank Sinatra, while another Lhasa Apso named Gloria, she's new to the park as of last week, trots up to sniff her anus. Gloria, we all scold, dabbing at the perspiration in our unshaven armpits. Delilah yanks Beatrice's leash again and licks her lips as she stuffs her snack of organic seed crackers into her pocket. Two seeds cling to her wet, translucent lip gloss, like fatty acid flies caught in a hydrogenated polyisobutene sticky insect trap on a Maybelline office window. I consider telling her about the seeds on her lips, then get distracted by Beatrice's stamina with poor Frank. Delilah says, look, we all know in-person ideating is key to upscaling our strategic alignment with our change-making metrics and blue-sky thought-leading for resilience. She sets a timeline for our new transformative scheme for a thriving team, flex gradual remote to office policy, wherein we tag team going into the office twice a week for 3 weeks, and then we're all required to return 5 days a week after that point. Holly in comms points out that this doesn't feel very gradual. Sarah pings me on team, saying she doesn't think Delilah thinks tag team means what she thinks it means. Delilah says, she's late for a hair appointment, and then that high-level virtual board convening. Can you send that PPT, Holly? You did? I don't see it. Can you loop in Melanie and send again in 5 different versions so we can A-B test? But, she continues, if we put a pin in this, she'll circle back by COB with more details on the Monday MyGest. Meanwhile, please take up any concerns with Richard. We ask, who's Richard? Sarah pings me, saying she doesn't think Delilah thinks A-B test means what she thinks it means. Beatrice erupts into a yapping fit as Gloria humps the pinecone Beatrice salvaged from a pile of leaves beneath Frank Sinatra, and Delilah says and hangs up. Later, Delilah emails out the Monday MyGest, outlining her transformative scheme for a thriving team, flex gradual remote-to-office policy, accompanied by a gif of a corgi on a laptop on a skateboard. Sarah asks if she can go home every 45 minutes to water her plants. One of her plants is a rare vine from the Amazon that I've become increasingly suspicious was imported illegally, but I haven't had the mental bandwidth to explain to her the harms of illegal plant imports and their cascading effects on deforestation and climate change and methane release and mangrove extinction and energy insecurity and counterfeit plant seeds and corporate nursery malware and early onset dementia from the methane release, etc. It is especially disheartening to think Sarah would be illegally importing plants from the Amazon, given that we work for a nonprofit that tracks all the companies, that track databases, that track open-source machine learning algorithms, that track how many species of snails are dying off in coastal wetlands every year. Delilah tells Sarah, if you must, but please remember, the early bird is master of none. Sarah pings us, asking what this means. Holly tells her to compost her plants. I send her a Slate article on houseplant ethics. The next day, Delilah tells me in our one-on-one check-in that she's been exceedingly pleased with my performance of late, and she hopes I'm taking enough time for myself. I am taken aback. I say, thank you. I admit it's still been hard without Alexandra, but it gets easier every day, I guess. There's a pause in our conversation. Delilah's video is off, but I hear the blare of a car horn in her background and some man calling for her to take the goddamn baguette. My deceased wife, I remind her. Last April? Ah, she says. Right, so sorry. I tell her it's okay. She asks if I'd like her to donate to the local LGBTQ+ fund in my wife's memory. She asked this last month when I reminded her of my dead wife. I tell her I appreciate the thought, but don't worry about it. Also, I don't think such a fund exists. What might be nice, I add, is there's a live experimental clarinet performance in the park this afternoon, and I'd appreciate being able to stop by if I could take 2 hours of PTO. My wife used to dabble in experimental clarinet, and it was nice. Oof, Delilah sighs. Today's a bit short notice. Can you just let me know a couple months in advance the next time there's a live experimental clarinet performance? I tell her I think this is the last one until next summer. She says, you know, I just saw a banner ad for some harpsichord virtuoso who'll be playing under the 9th Street overpass next Tuesday. You could go to that. She says she read somewhere this morning that harpsichord music, especially straight harpsichord music, has been proven to work in concert with our brain stewards of sleep during REM cycle dreamscapes to stimulate long-dormant pyramidal neurons in our hippocampi, linked to both qualitative innovation visioning and quantitative prowess in honing fiscal acumen, and it may also help stoke the violet flames of one's psychological womb in order to attain a higher level of grounding and will away annoying ailments like iron deficiency, depression, and/or psychosis. You could make that a performance goal, she suggests. Learning street harpsichord? I ask to clarify. No, listening to it under the over... she says. Beatrice! Sorry, late for the dentist. The day I go into the office, no one is there. Sarah is with her plants. Holly has gone over to the private sector to work for a company that ships their employees heated ergonomic desk chairs with invisible armrest sensors compatible with virtual home assistant systems. And Delilah is squeezing in the dog park before a dermatologist appointment and a spin class with her grandmother. I sink into Delilah's chair in front of the window lined with bobblehead Lessa Apsos. In the corner behind her desk is a half-rolled poster of Peyton Manning and a life-size cutout of Jodie Foster at the 1992 Academy Awards. I don't recall these things being here before. Behind me, I hear a moist snuffling sound that I assume is a dog nose, but it is a man. This man, maybe 73, wearing a violet sweater vest and confusingly damp sandals, it has not been raining, meanders over and offers me a tote bag crammed with succulents. The tote bag reads, Clarinet Collective, Kansas City, 1969. The man says his name is Richard. I say, Richard, can I ask if any of the clarinet music was experimental? Richard shrugs and says, well, I was experimental, if you know what I mean, so the clarinets probably were too. I look at the tote bag. In the blue of my memory, lines of warm song unfurl themselves. I say, and I accept the succulents.